Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Scheltema, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Roger Litwiller. Each week at this time, we visit with an author from our region. We get an introduction to their work, a glimpse into their lives. We ask them what prompts them to write, and we have an opportunity to hear them read from their work. This week, we're very pleased to have Roger with us. Welcome, Roger.
Hi, how are you?
Well, Roger has published several books about the Royal Canadian Navy, as well as articles in national magazines and newspapers. He likes to entwine the history of Canadian ships with interviews of veterans who served in them, thus giving a human face to the ship's story. Roger is also a keen photographer and easily sells his photo art, which he has produced since digital cameras and computers have come along to inspire him. His interest in photography was ignited when his father handed Roger a Brownie box camera, and together they developed black and white pictures in the basement. He also enjoys public speaking and has lectured to several organizations in Central Canada and the Maritimes. He likes to support the variety of book retailers, museums, community groups, etc., which have invited him to speak by signing his books. He is a member of several research and naval preservation groups. Roger has been a decorated paramedic for 33 years, but still finds time for his writing, of course, and even a hobby or two, like model railroading. So, Roger, how did you first become interested in the Navy? Did you serve in the Navy yourself?
I did, in a reserve capacity. My interest sparked, actually, it was the 1976 Olympics. We were on vacation, family vacation, and passed through Kingston right after Olympic sailing had completed. And there were three very sleek, very unique ships in the harbor. And there were some of Canada's destroyers. And it just amazed me to see these fighting ships sitting there in Kingston. And from that, I just had to belong. So eventually I joined the Sea Cadets. From the Sea Cadets, I went on to the Reserves. During that time, I was actually able to do one tour on board HMCS Ottawa in 1981 on a Carabops cruise, which was a working up program in the Caribbean for 3 months from January to March.
Oh, that sounds exciting. It was wonderful.
Oh, yes. 18 years old and single and in the Caribbean on a destroyer. It was a glorious time.
I bet. And then you started writing articles about the ships and the Navy?
Well, actually, my writing started as a paramedic. I was doing public relations for our ambulance service in Trenton. So that got me writing some newspaper articles. Later on, back involved with the cadets, I did articles on our local cadet corps, NLCC Trentonian, and submitting them to the newspapers. And then that kind of eventually blossomed into writing articles for the local paper for the Battle of Atlantic Sundays and commemoration events and so on. So it was a slow progression with very small 1 and 2 paragraph articles and worked its way up to full pages.
Mm. And what prompted you to write about it in the first place?
Because nobody else was. and there's some great stories out there that aren't being told. And I figured I'm in an opportunity to tell these stories, and they need to be told.
Yeah. And do you find it easy to find people to tell you the stories in the first place?
Depends. With my White Ensign Flying book, looking for interviews there, most of the veterans from the ship I found were in the obituaries.
Oh, dear.
Because it was some 60, almost 70 years after the fact. But once I did find a living member of the crew, it produced introductions right across the country. And I was able to interview veterans either in person or on the phone or through letters, right from Belle Island, Newfoundland to Vancouver and Florida to Los Angeles.
Hmm. And obviously these books are nonfiction. Is it your photographs that are in them, or do you have a...
No, when I interview the veterans for my work, for my research, I ask if they have any photos from their service in the Navy. And those that are willing, I take the photos, digitally scan them at publishing quality, return the originals to the veteran, along with a copy of the digital scans. I then use those in my writing. And the photos are truly unique because they're not just the broadside of a ship, which is the official Navy photo. These are photos taken by sailors of what sailors do. So it shows what's important to the men and women that serve in our Navy. And it changes the whole aspect of the storyline.
And I imagine the stories are like that too. You're not getting the official line on the ships or the things that happened on those ships. You're getting the personal stories.
Actually, I use both. For the actual record of the ship, I consult the National Archives in Ottawa, the Navy Archives, Directorate of History and Heritage for the military, and I get the official account, and usually it's from bits and pieces, for Trentonian, and I literally had to go through hundreds and hundreds of individual radio messages to piece together the 15 months of her service.
Wow.
But you give me a day and a time, and I know exactly where that ship was and what it was doing that day. And it's in the book.
Wow.
But then I also have 30 sailors that lived in that ship telling me what they saw, what they did, how they did it, what they smelled, what was going on around them. And now it goes from an official history to a true story of life in our Navy during the war.
Yeah. It takes on the human aspect.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, perhaps you'd like to read to us from one of the books.
Yeah. I'm going to read two passages. Both passages are very close to June 6th, 1944. And as most people know, that's when D-Day was taking place. Just to set it up a little bit, Trentonian, the corvette in the story, was escorting a very large convoy of 60 ships from north of the north end of Scotland to the Normandy beachhead, which was a very long trip. They were traveling at a very slow rate of speed, and everything was on a timetable. You know, ships departing the ports to get to the beachhead at the right time for the invasion to move smoothly. Trentonian was actually the first convoy to leave on that entire Normandy invasion timetable. So you literally say she was the spearhead of the invasion. So these 60 ships are actually destitute World War One, pre-World War One ships, stripped, and they're going to be sunk when they get to the beachhead. So they're shepherding these convoys, and there's flotillas of battleships and cruisers and troop ships moving by them, and Trentonian is stuck with these 60 old derelicts. On the 5th, the skipper of Trentonian, Bill Harrison, calls the crew together for a talk, and one of the sailors, Jack Harold, started a diary. And this is his first entry. The old man called the crew together for a pep talk on what is about to happen. I am going to have a ringside seat to the biggest thing in warfare that man has ever conceived or attempted. We are now in the English Channel, shepherding our convoy like a big wandering flock of sheep under the watchful eye of British fighter and bomber aircraft. This strip of water will in a day or two, without a doubt, become the hottest spot on earth, and I shall be at the very vortex of this man-made hell. In case I do not survive, perhaps someday someone will say he died doing his duty. It has been estimated that 85% of the men taking part in this invasion will not come out of it, while everyone is hoping that he will be one of the 15%, but also resolved to go down fighting if he is not. Jack was 22 when he wrote that.
Wow, that's sad.
And it's hard to comprehend at 22 years old willingly going into a situation where you're being told there's an 85% chance you will not survive today. Today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And did he survive?
He did, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, the other one takes place on the 7th of June. And Trentonian is at the beachhead. They've successfully escorted their convoy. And the ships were disposed throughout all five beaches and sunk as a breakwater. So Trentonian's done her job. She's now at anchor waiting for orders for another job. And this is the next passage. So able seaman Jack Scott commented on a troop ship that passed Trentonian with soldiers filling its decks, heading for the beachhead. They recognized the maple leaf on our stack, which is the funnel, and they started to cheer. The troop ship was carrying a French-Canadian Army unit, and then we cheered them back. Stoker Bruce Keir, another veteran, recalled the troop ship anchored next to Trentonian. The air was filled with the rumble of the steel anchor chain sliding over its deck, then sirens and steady stream of orders over the PA system, calling the soldiers to the landing craft. Once again, the air was filled with the noise of the landing craft being launched from the ship's deck, followed by the steady rumble of the big diesel engines in each boat. Keir and his shipmates watched as the Canadian soldiers scrambled down the nets into the waiting craft alongside. They could hear the curses as the soldiers were tossed against the steel side of the troop ship and thrown on the decks of the bobbing landing craft. This activity culminated with the roar of the landing craft engines as they started their race towards the beach. The crew of Trentonian gave their brethren one final cheer. As the men in Trentonian looked back at the troop ship, they were amazed at the change from only a few moments before. The large ship, so full of activity and noise only moments ago, now bobbed silently from its anchor, a ghost ship empty of life. And Keir wondered how many of those men would still be alive by tomorrow.
Oh, dear. Well, thank you, Roger. And now we'll take a short break.